Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live today. Face recognition on drones, FCC's trying to put cell phones back on planes, and Amazon has Thursday night football. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
I said niggas pop shit all the time. Me, I don't trip because they know I'm never lying. Look in between the lines,
but like Ali in his prime. Shall we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective? That is my namesake, Mr. Joseph Badass. with something off his new album that just came out Tuesday, I think. Did it just come out?
Yeah, it just came out.
Yeah, I got it yesterday. I'm like two tracks in, and I like it a lot. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Joey's always been one of my favorite newcomer MCs.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he bridges kind of like the older flow and kind of like the newer flow. He still has like that street, a social conscious, you know, type of form, and I like that, you know what I'm saying? So there's very few of us that are actually spitting these days.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
He's one of them.
Absolutely, and a great personality too.
Exactly. He's super, super personal.
Is funny. That funny dynamic.
Exactly.
Guy. Anyway, welcome to the show. We got a few things to talk about. You know, Bezos is at it again. I mean, Google, whose mantra is "Do no evil," is not. I'm not saying doing evil, but they are doing some dirt, maybe, or some things that weren't right. But let's get into our police state, our tech state, in the Trumpian world. So, you know, we know about Trump and the wall and his increased border patrol, and ICE is cracking down on folks and everything else. But one of the things that the border patrol is maybe doing is they're going to add sort of face recognition software to drones. And I think that seems that could be great. I just don't know how that works in a border patrol manner if you haven't to identify illegal aliens. I don't know how that works.
I mean, because they probably already have a few people that they've already identified as, you know, potential threats or criminals or whatever. And so they already have them in the database, in the files, and so they're able to match, you know, the facial recognition capture from the drone to whatever they have stored away in the database. And so I think that's kind of what they're trying to leverage with the technology, to be able to, you know, use the drones, be able to have that unmanned, be able to, you know, have the heat recognition to see if people are crossing the border, and then to be able to even go further and be like, hey, okay, well, based on the phenotypical traits of this person, it could be this person. So let's alert the forces, essentially. So I think that, you know, spending all this money for all of this, I mean, I don't necessarily support it. I think that there's a better use for, you know, our tax dollars, in terms of, you know, educational support, things that are happening within our own communities that actually need, you know, repair, infrastructure that needs to be rebuilt. So I feel like the financial backing of these things, I just don't see the value of it. But that's just my opinion.
And I agree. And also, like, it feels like it's a bit of a Trojan horse always. It's always a thing where it's like, oh, this is for the border. We can help stop illegal aliens. Next thing you know, there's a drone outside your door.
Exactly. being used on me.
Exactly. Right. So it's like, I mean, you know, or being used in the communities, the very communities you're talking about.
Exactly.
You know, to, you know, and I'm sure we'll see an increased drone activity in certain neighborhoods and certain cities, you know, once the drones become active. So,
right.
You know, yeah, it's a slippery slope. I mean, a slippery slope. And, like, again, we you know, Trump ran on this whole idea. The thing that is interesting to me about his brand of law enforcement or enforcement or border enforcement is, this is also the way fascistic regimes work, is it's kind of the bait and switch. Like, you're able to sort of use all these powers of policing and extreme policing for those guys over on the border wall.
No.
But then all of a sudden you have all this technology. Exactly. Why don't we just use it on the black folks?
Exactly.
Or let's use it to stop crime in Chicago, the crime written Chicago, or whatever it is. Same thing with war, you know?
I mean, there's a show on Fox, APB. We've talked uh-huh. about it on the show before, where, you know, a billionaire buys a police station, and he, you know, brings on all this new technology to fight crime or whatever. And one of the new technological devices he brings in is an actual drone, which is exactly what we're talking about. Like, right. it has facial recognition, it's able to see through walls, it's able to even shoot like lasers, yeah. like to capture all this information. So I mean, I know these are concepts that I mean, it's not just theoretical. These are things that they definitely want to implement domestically, not just, you know, to protect the walls, protect the borders. This is technology they want to use on us as well. So
yeah, it's all in the name of fighting crime. And then, you know, next thing you know, who's the, it's the question. I'm all for fighting crime, but when certain people are in power, the question is, who's the criminal?
Exactly.
Who do they consider the criminal?
That's exactly right. So. I'll put this to you. So this is an interesting story, though, because very seldomly do we see, you know, a government agency or a piece of government that actually bullhorns outward to a private companies to develop technology to be used for government sanctions. What bad. Do you think about that? Because that's not a typical thing that we see.
I mean, it's all bad. I mean, this is the classic, you know, sort of Republican Democrat or, you know, argument. I mean, you know, look, you know, Republicans believe in quote unquote less government. They believe in taking everything away from the government and putting it in quote unquote the hands of the people, i.e. corporations.
The rich people.
Yeah, but specifically corporations. They feel like corporations can do what it should be able to in the free market do what they want to do. To answer your question, I just think that government has to do this stuff because you need regulation on this stuff.
That's right.
And so you need to be able to regulate it. If you outsource everything to private companies are in the business of making money.
No, but that's a distinction, though. They're saying that, hey, private company, develop this for us. You bid for it, we'll buy you out, and then we'll use it. That's what the case is. It's not like, hey, we'll subsidize you and pay for it, and you run it through your company. No, we're going to buy it
from
you.
Oh, I like that then. I like that because I do like the idea of using going out and find the best technology from the best people and then, you know, supporting free market that way. But long as the government, there's some government oversight and regulation on that. I mean, I guess it depends on what government's in power, but like, you know, but long as there's some government oversight and regulation that, I think that's great. But if not, like in our next story, it's a problem for mm-hmm. me. It's a problem for me. Like, for instance, and it brings our next story about, the Trump administration and what they're doing, you know, to combat net neutrality and things of that nature. It's like, you know, I mean, you know, President Obama put all these things in place to stop these giant, you know, multinational conglomerate telecommunication companies from having access to basically two things: having too much access to all your private information and browser histories and everything else, and then also stopping them from controlling the speed in which you get your information and your internet, and allowing them to profit on, oh, you want faster internet? That'll cost you three times as much. So they put all that in, saying the net is one net, free for everyone. Well, President Trump's administration doesn't seem to think that's the case. They think that, as Sean Spicer put it, it's an overreach on President Obama's part to say that, you know, these companies aren't allowed to test themselves in the free market. In other words, juice us for cash. So the first thing they did was overturn all the stuff that Obama had in place to stop these companies from selling our browser history, doing all these different things. They think that these companies should be able to make as much money as possible and have the freedom to do whatever they want, even at our expense. And the next thing they're doing is going in and trying to get rid of this whole net neutrality business. Mm-hmm. So corporations could have the right to, in the free market, charge. And that's the way things get better, is they'll charge us for more and it'll drive up innovation. That's all bullshit.
That's terrible. Bullshit.
And it's horrible.
And the argument is exactly that. Drive up innovation. And hey, the more money we make, the more jobs we can provide.
Wrong.
No, come on, dude. Is Wrong. That really how it works? No.
Nope.
So, yeah, the whole fast lane, slow lane model, like the tier model of, hey, you can have faster internet buy where you have to pay for it more, or like shutting people out because they have the right speed, so they don't have the information, they don't have the video file to download. Like, all that is incredibly insensitive and oppressive, because information should be free for everyone, you know? And so the fact that Trump administration are advocating like pulling back on this, I think is disastrous. Number one, but I do like the fact that the Silicon Valley community, a lot of tech companies, you know, are being vocal about this issue, and I think they're raising the awareness like they once did back in 2015 before it was passed. They're now kind of back on the bullhorn and kind of galvanizing people to stand by it to make sure that it's not repealed, it's not changed, and I do like that. So I hope that we are able to stand strong with this position and make sure that the law as it stands now will stay forever, you know?
Right. So. I agree. This is super troubling. Of the many things on a daily basis that are troubling in the Trump administration, this is super troubling. And it's just, you know, I mean, you know, the Mike Pence and Paul Ryan Republican wing wants to just deregulate everything. Deregulate everything. Corporations will figure it out. People will suffer. But, you know, hey, that's the way it
life
is.
Life will go on.
Yeah, so I don't know. And then Trump is sort of letting it happen because he has no ideology and he's a moron. Anyway, I digress. Speaking of another government regulation, another government agency, which I'm surprised Trump is going to just shut down and give it to a private company. The FCC is now sort of revising and revisiting its stance on cell phones on planes. They're like trying to want to figure out a way to allow cell phone use on planes, and I think that that could be very interesting. I mean, well, first of all, just from an etiquette standpoint, and you know, what do you think about this? Do you want to be on a plane with everybody talking on a cell phone?
I mean, when you're on a plane, you're hearing conversations anyway. Either you're on a plane with someone that you know and you're sparking up conversation, or even oftentimes you meet someone on the plane and you're sparking up conversation. What's the difference? So I mean, I mean, when you look at it like a plane of 100 plus people on the phone, like that could be very chaotic. But I mean, there's already enough noise pollution on the plane anyway, so right. I don't see the difference. And if there is a way to safely do that where it doesn't impede on what's happening with the cell towers and the communications for the pilot, I think we should. Like it'll promote business, it'll promote, you know, safety, security with, you know, your family members. Like you'll be able to have more contact. I like that. I hate the fact that I can't use my phone when I'm on a plane. So
yeah, I just want to, I mean, you know, I agree. I like it too. I get that, you know, flight attendants and pilots in there are very much against it because they've got to deal with people. They got to try to do their job while people on. Exactly right. On the phone, and some loud businessman like, I told the guy to F off, whatever. So like, you know, and I get that that's annoying, but listen, I agree. Like, you know, I think that it does promote safety because you have the ability for people to, you know, if you see something, say something, right. You know, to immediately, and then people can communicate with each other, with the ground, with other planes, perhaps, you know. So,
speaking of planes and airline companies, what do you think about the whole United debacle and the social media storm and how that's really destroyed their profits within the last week?
I mean, not unlike Uber. This is like the Uber situation on crack because, you know, I mean, you know, airlines are sort of billion-dollar operations, but they're also really fragile. Like, you can get, like, these billion-dollar airlines, you give them a good week or two.
Yeah, they can
go down.
They can topple,
like,
for sure.
Because you're talking about millions and millions of dollars each day.
Right.
Like, that they're losing. And so, it's a big deal. Listen, I think obviously the policy was insanely ridiculous. I think the video was ridiculous. I don't even know. I just can't. There's a scenario. There's so many scenarios where I think and everyone thinks that, like, what if that were you?
Right.
Like, I don't know what I'd be doing. Like, I don't know that. I'd be unconscious. That'd knock me out and drag me out like that.
Without question.
I don't know what. Like, I'm not going to be.
I'm not being
dragged
out like that.
I'm not sitting there like.
No.
Like, first of all, I'm walking out on my own. But I'm not happy about it. But no one's dragging me anywhere.
Heck no.
Second of all,
I'm not going to be the only one dragged out.
Yeah, exactly.
There's going to be someone else laid out, too.
Like, the whole thing is, I mean, it's ridiculous. And then of course, the PR nightmare of him being being Asian, being Chinese. And then the triple PR nightmare of his seat being given up for other, you know, United employees, although flight crew had to go somewhere, I get it. It's just a nightmare. And so, yeah, so they're paying the price. They're paying the price. The question for you, I think it's just interesting to see. I love this is a good example of our democracy, of social media democracy and consumer dollars at work and how that works. But I have a question for you. Do you think they'll recover?
Yeah, they'll recover.
We'll have to do free flights for all Chinese people.
I mean, it's just time. People forget. The next story will, you know, surface, and people won't even remember. You know what I'm saying? And you know, bills will
Trump,
get.
So Trump got elected.
Exactly. Bills will get paid. Dollars will be collected. You know, that's how. That's unfortunately that's how it works. I feel like even with, I mean, we should talk about this too, even with like the whole Pepsi campaign.
Yep.
I feel like, you know, yeah, it'll be a shitstorm, firestorm for a minute, you know, all the memes, all the tweets, all the posts, all the dialogue and banter, but then it's going to die down. And then, you know, it's not enough sustainability with our criticism of corporations and what they do. I think that it's very temporary. And I think, like, even with Uber, like we talked about this before, like, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, protests against Uber, but Uber's still going to sustain and still going to make millions, if not billions, of dollars, even though they're sexist and racist and all of the above. Like, so I mean, I that's my answer to that, man. I feel like it's shameful. I feel like there should be more consequence and punishment, but I don't see it coming.
Well, I mean, I agree. I do want to ask you about, since we're here, what about that Pepsi ad, the Kylie Jenner thing? What did you make? I mean, did you read about it and then watch it, or did you watch it?
I saw memes first, and I'm like, "What is this?"
Right.
And then I'm like, "Okay, let me check this out." And then I went to check it out, and I was just like, "Oh my gosh, this is terrible."
Yeah,
like it was terrible.
So as a person who is a creative, and as a person who is a filmmaker, and also a person who deals with brands and is in this position, like, you know, why did you create that campaign to keep it right? No, but what?
Because they paid me. That's why. That's the answer to that.
I think my thing with that is, you know, the ad to me is not even that bad. I think it's actually a quite ambitious and nice thing until the last 15 seconds of the ad. So, I mean, do you agree with that? Do you think the whole thing's just ill-conceived?
I feel like you have an argument there. I feel like, you know, I could go with that argument. I don't want to, but I could go with that. Like, her not handing the Pepsi to the police, you know, you do away with that, and you just see the camaraderie of the collective elements of it, the diversity and people coming together. Like, if there was a creative way to communicate Pepsi through that without the bridge between the police, then maybe. But I don't want to make that argument, but I think that was definitely the kill shot, you know?
Yeah.
That was just like the icing on the cake. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Really? Okay.
Let me ask you, I'm just giving you a bunch of different questions. Second question for you is, what if it wasn't Kylie Jenner? What if it was...
Will I Am?
No, God. Or whatever, like my girl from Black-ish, the middle...
Yara?
Yeah. What if it was her?
I still think like Pepsi inserting themselves so direct, you know. I think it should be subtle. I think your brand story should be subtle. It shouldn't be direct like that. And it's just too direct. And the situation is already hypersensitive. And like we already feel like we're marginalized. We already feel like our stories aren't fully represented or listened to. So to be able to have a brand that really doesn't know our condition.
Pepsi Lives Matter.
They don't know our condition. They're not in the streets with us, you know what I'm saying? So for them to be able to communicate that in such a way, it's really offensive. It's really disrespectful.
It is.
It diminishes, you know, what folks are out there advocating for, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, let me ask you another question. So do you think it was a chicken egg the situation? Do you think that it was Pepsi, like, we signed Kylie Jenner, let's figure out a cool campaign around her and youth. She's young, she's crazy, let's build something around Kylie? Or was it like, we have this campaign about, you know, so what's happening right now, and then the protest movement, and then the, you know, the LGBT and the Black Lives Matter and the Muslims and then everything else that's happening right now and youth culture. Like, let's have Pepsi, you know,
definitely think
do that.
The latter
and let's
the
find
former.
Let's find someone who is the face of youth.
I don't know if it's a find someone.
Kylie Jenner.
I think maybe those two ideas kind of just blended together. Like maybe they had her and they were already brewing this idea of social progressive of campaign. Hey, blend them together. Like, or maybe it did happen like in a linear fashion, as you suggest. I don't know. But either way, it's terrible. It lacks creativity. It lacks sensitivity. It lacks like really appreciation for, like I said, the lives of people that are actually struggling and going through real life shit, you know?
And yeah.
Trying to use their voices. That's all they fucking have to get shit changed.
Yeah.
And then Pepsi want to come in with some dumbass commercial.
I agree with all that. I think my quick takes on that are, I think the spirit in which they wanted to do that was right. I think they just started going around. It's just, you can tell, you can just see the executives and cooks in the kitchen on this. Like, you see it just one of those things that we've been in this process. It just felt like it got noted to death. I feel like the idea of, like, you know, youth culture is here, and Pepsi want to be part of youth culture and help this, and protest culture and help this along. But the first red flag for me, or blue flag, I should say, is all of the protest signs were the blue kind of Pepsi-ish signs. That was like, that's my first, like, uh-oh. Like, like, why is everything red and blue and Pepsi? Like, that's not, what are they protesting? Uh-oh. So that was, I did like to have they clearly, gay folks and trans folks.
All the archetypes.
They had them all there. They had the Muslim lady, they had the black dude, they had the gay folks. So I did like that they were clear on that. They weren't ambiguous. Like, wasn't like someone who's gay-ish or Muslim-ish. You know, it was they were clear on that. So they had some courage there. The other place they went wrong, obviously, is the inclusion. You can tell that this is where they got noted to death, that it's, they don't want this to be a red state, blue state issue. This one, so they feel like, well, but cops drink Pepsi too, so let's include the cops. We can't make the cops the bad guys. They're cops. We can't make these the good guys. No one's bad. Like, we're all here together. They're just doing their job. I know. Let's have everyone drink Pepsi at the end. Even at that, I think that's kind of ill-conceived. It feels like we're trying to do too much. Either have one message of youth culture or one message of something else. But I get why they're trying to do that. But in doing so, to have the face of that be Kylie Jenner. Kendall Jenner is not... You know, and that last shot of the Pepsi, and then her turning around and cheering, and everyone like, yes, yes, like emphatically cheering that they gave the cop drink the Pepsi. Too much. No. How did that get, those last shots, that last 15 seconds? My man was so happy.
How did that get approved?
There's one dude that was so happy that the cop drank the Pepsi. He was so happy. Yes!
Well, the black dude in the back, like, he was through the roof happy.
He drank it. You did it, Kylie. You did it.
They're not gonna
Kindle,
right? But the memes, man. Those memes on Instagram.
I actually have not seen.
Oh my gosh, they're just ridiculous.
Okay,
they're beyond ridiculous.
I gotta check those out. Anyway, we digress. Amazon will next season will stream Thursday Night Football games, which is a huge deal. I mean, obviously, Twitter had a little bit of that last year. And now Amazon is going to have it. This is a big key. It's a big one for Amazon, who is really trying to draw people to Amazon Prime. They the fact that they're doing live and streaming live is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. As we had some deals with them before, we didn't think that was capable, mm-hmm. possible. Mm-hmm. Now we know it is possible.
They said it was possible.
Oh, okay.
They said Amazon said it was possible.
Oh, well, that's
I remember them saying that.
That's really dumb. So yeah, I mean, you know, there is a. What do you think of this? I think it's great.
I think this is huge. I think this is.
And what does this mean for the future of other stuff?
Well, I think the big point is that they're trying to leverage themselves, obviously, against their competitor, Netflix, and so to be able to have, you know, a different revenue stream or a different way of disseminating information, especially sports, people really have stronghold affinity to be able to do that within their ecosystem, something that Netflix is not doing, and we don't have any signs of them trying to do either. So to be able to have that as an advantage, as leverage, I think is a huge step for Amazon. Even though they pay $50 million for 10 games versus, I think, what Twitter paid last year, $10 million, I think Amazon has the dough to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, this is great. This is great to be able to say that I don't have to have my cable to watch football, or I don't have to have the top box to get, you know, the network channels. I could just stream everything now.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge. And to be able to have the infrastructure in place to be able to do other things, other games or other live events, concerts, the list goes on. And if they're going to be the front runner in that space, I say Netflix, watch out.
Yeah. Wow.
Seriously.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, and I think that this opens the door to other things. I mean, the thing about this is Netflix, I mean, Amazon has the money to pay, because you know, ESPN and all those other people would pay these ridiculous amounts of money to be in the NFL and some of those sports networks help build their whole networks. Well, you know, ESPN, although still rich, you know, and all those deals are still for a long time from now. I don't know the next time these deals come along that that ESPN will have the money to pay for this next round of NFL's deals. But, you know, we'll have the money. Amazon.
Seriously.
So, I mean, we maybe have a situation where we'll be watching a lot of sports on Amazon because they can pay for the rights.
That's crazy.
They're not going to get cheaper.
They're not.
And, ESPN's subscriptions are dwindling and dwindling and dwindling, and Amazon subscriptions are rising.
Yeah.
And they've got other revenue streams. Absolutely. Aside from Prime. So,
I mean, what is it, $4 for ESPN? Is that what it is?
No, it's like $7.
Okay, $7 times 12, yeah. That's $84. Your Amazon Prime subscription, $84 for the year,
yep.
12 months. So your Amazon Prime subscription is $100, and you get NFL. Well, you don't get all sports. Yep. You get NFL, and now you get all this other shit, more value. I think people will see that.
Not to mention, you know, ESPN, we've covered this too, but now that people are kind of woke to the fact that, like, there's so many sports fans who just pay for ESPN because they have to.
Right.
Now that there's all the options, like, I don't want to do that. And ESPN's subs have dropped, like, some crazy number, like 11%, but it doesn't seem like a not lot, but as you just rolled around those numbers, that's like, you know, 70 million people
exactly.
At $84 a year. That's
a lot of money.
That's why ESPN is steady laying folks off right now. Restructuring, laying folks off. So at a certain point, they still make a lot of money, but at a certain point, they're not going to be able to afford this.
Right.
So they're not getting fat on us just getting ESPN because we got to.
That's right.
You know, I mean, it's a great business model. They had a great run for 33 years.
Yeah.
A great run, but it's over now.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it might be over. Anyway.
I mean, the signs are definitely there.
So ESPN needs to really figure themselves out, as Bill Simmons been asking them to do, but we'll see. What about this? Speaking of Amazon, Amazon also said they're going to refund up to $70 million of in-app purchases made by children. Now, I have kids, and I've seen all kinds of things like this where, you know, you have a son. You don't think Jahi's there yet.
Not yet.
But you will have this very soon. Well, he'll be tapping on some stuff, and next thing you know, you've bought a bunch of
I got a bill.
Yeah, I got a bill. Or worse, they're playing whatever it is, Game of War or Farmville or something, and they just start, like, buying
expansions.
Shit. Yeah, you're like, what's all this? Like, it's not free. Right. So that happens all the time. Amazon's like, yeah, that's bad. All the ones I think are poorly designed and other things, then they're going to refund that money.
Yeah, I mean, they should. I mean, because I think that there should be, you know, in the workflow of buying the expansion pack or whatever it is that you're buying to continue to play the freemium version of the game, there should be more I guess more protocols that require either the parent to put in a passcode or their fingerprint or something to be able to purchase that, not just something that a kid could easily just press a button and continue to play. So I think that's why they lost that lawsuit because, I mean, that's how it is in the App Store. If you want to buy an expansion pack, you got to put in your iCloud login, or you have to put in your fingerprint. So I think that they need to be able to implement that technology. I think they already have, but I mean, this is from, I think, like 2000. This is a long period of time. This is over 5 years of time.
Yeah, because for a long time, you know, companies would just know that and try to figure out a way to trick people into, you know, just buying extra stuff, and this is a huge business. I mean, people wonder, watch the Super Bowl and see Arnold Schwarzenegger on an app commercial for your phone,
yeah.
And like, how does he do that? I tell you, how he does that. But you download the app for free,
exactly.
But once you start playing, they got you
exactly,
and you're spending
$5, $10, $20,
spending hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars a year on these games.
It's hard.
And you know, it's the same model as Amazon. All the folks, if they get you for at least $10 a month, that's Amazon money.
Yeah, that's extra.
Think about that. Yeah. Like, you know, like the app's for free. They get you for purchase this. Oh, with some coins. $5 for some coins.
Man.
You know, like in the next year, they get you $10 a month. That is that they're Netflix.
Yeah.
So that's a small model, but people make a small fortune on these things. Google, who is I think it's "Do No Evil" is their mantra, and they went on a whole thing about their equal pay day. You know, the Labor Department looked into them and said there's an extreme gender pay gap across this entire workforce. Only 31% of the entire workforce there are women. And of those women, only one of five have like sort of high paying tech jobs. And those numbers are terrible.
Yeah, you know, 25% are in executive positions.
Yes.
It's horrible.
I mean, I don't, I mean, so what Google argue obviously is that, you know, Google will obviously argue that, you know, it is a male-heavy industry, and engineers and techs are a male-heavy profession. They're just drawing from the best. I get that, but that is, it's an excuse. It's the same excuse of, like, you know, that, oh, well, there's no black filmmakers. You know, there's no black directors because exactly. Black people don't direct stuff.
Right.
So I don't know. Or, you know, black movies don't work overseas. So therefore, we don't make them. Like, exactly. I mean, at a certain point, the industry has to do some course correction. I think that the tech industry, someone as large as Google, surely can go into these engineering schools, college schools, elementary schools, and start recruiting and growing a new workforce.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. They have the dollars to be able to farm the best talent, and that talent should be diverse. It should be represented. It should represent what society looks like. Society doesn't look like all male. All white. It just doesn't. So I think the brain trust should be open to all people, you know, and all people that have that exemplify the highest of talent and intellect. And I think that, I mean, it doesn't make sense that, you know, Silicon Valley, which is supposed to be a proponent of innovation and change and disruption, has not gotten this right yet, you know. And I think that, hey, more advocacy, more of us being vocal about what we want. And demanding that, I mean, those stats are high for women. The same stats are high for people of color, as you kind of mentioned. And I mean, I think I was just reading a Forbes article about the top 50 companies in America. Most of them are tech companies. I think Google's in the top 10.
Yeah.
And we look at these stats, like, okay, well, all this new money, and women aren't represented, and right. People of color are not represented. So absolutely. we got to change that.
And I will look with the argument that, you know, these things take time. If you go into the schools, it takes, you know, 15 years for some of these kids to work their way through the system.
Nope.
And be able to be in there.
No.
And then Google's 15 years old, so whatever it is, so maybe that makes sense.
Definitely not.
But no, right?
No, we've been brilliant since we've been here.
That's right.
So
that's right. Well, I agree. So, so get your shit together, Google.
Right.
I mean, there's no real excuse for what's happening for you guys being as big as you are. This is a story that to me that is kind of under the radar, that's driving me crazy. But it's, you know, so Twitter is refusing a U.S. order to reveal the user behind the anti-Trump account. So there's some folks on Twitter who are really like heavily critical and heavily, you know, blasting out on Trump's anti-immigration policies and other things. And so, I mean, I don't want to say secretly, but it's not really reported. The Department of Homeland Security, went to Twitter and was like, we need to know what's going on, who's behind these accounts. That sounds like some Trump
definitely.
Shit right there. Like,
definitely.
Who's on this Twitter account? Go find them.
Right.
I own you guys.
Right.
Department of Homeland Security, go find out. And so, yeah, I mean, so Twitter filed a federal lawsuit to block an order by the U.S. government demanding to review who's there behind the account, and they won.
Yeah, they won.
So, I mean, the underreported thing here is that, like, who gave that order to go into Twitter? Who sent the Homeland Security into Twitter,
you know,
to find
did.
Out whose Twitter account this is?
You know who
that
did.
Seems a little excessive.
Hey, but I mean, think about who's on Twitter all the time. Who got the Twitter thumbs?
That
you know,
is crazy.
So he's like, he probably saw it, and he was like, you know what, we got to stop this now.
What do I have? Homeland Security, get over there,
right.
Get over to San Francisco, shut them down. Yeah. Like, that's insane to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. So anyway, I don't know why
he literally tried to turn his Twitter, well, it's the Drake line Twitter fingers into trigger fingers. Homeland Security, bring the heat. Like, what?
That's a trick line. That's a good one. Yeah, that story is, like, to me, super underreported. that's an underreported story, because that is like just feels screams of abuse of power. And anyway, I mean, that's when you're launching 59 missiles on Syria and Russian cruisers are headed towards some sort of conflict with North Korea and Russia. I guess Homeland Security shutting down Twitter is a small thing.
Man.
Anyway, so our boy Jeff Bezos is in the flight suit. He's out. He's posing out in front of Blue Origin, the Blue Origin space capsule. Out in Colorado. He said that this is the new crew capsule. It's going to take tourists out into space. They've got comfortable seats, lazy boy style seats. It'll be wonderful. It'll be perfect. I think this is all fantastic, except for the fact that I'm never going. Look at that capsule. Who's getting in that thing?
I'll get in there.
No! Yeah. No!
I think it's dope.
That thing is going to the tip of a rocket that's getting blasted into space with trillions of tons of jet fuel underneath it. No, thank you.
But you'll get in the, you're getting a plane, though, that has
thousands of gallons of jet fuel right below you.
I'm good. No, thank you.
I think it's fresh, man, that you could actually go into space. You could see, you know, the atmosphere. You could see the curvature of the planet. And you could also be in the no-gravity zone and be floating and stuff.
Sure.
I think that's fresh to death. Even though when you come back down to Earth and you have to deal with the gravitational forces, they say 3 hours after you land back on the ground, you're going to throw up. I think that's hilarious.
Your whole organs are exactly. Just like, rah!
That's crazy.
They've been floating around up there for so long. That, you know, no, thank you. Let me know how it works out.
Hey, man. Hey, we might all be taking trips to space, you know, in the next 20, 30 years.
Wow. this kid, this is interesting to me. Like, I don't understand this word. A teen wrote hashtag Black Lives Matter on a college application 100 times and got accepted. Do you know the story?
I do.
What happened? Tell me about this.
I mean, so this kid, I forgot his name, but I mean, he's always been socially progressive and advocating, you know, for equal rights for people of color, specifically in the Muslim community and in the Black community. And so what he did was to try to bring more awareness to the Black Lives Matter movement, which is a movement that he is intrinsically connected to and stands by. He essentially wrote it 100 times on his college application, and he's arguing that, you know, it's not about the why, it's about the what. And so he communicated the what 100 times, mm-hmm. and it I guess because of everything that they knew about him prior, that they accepted him. And so he wanted to then obviously use the attention that he was getting, the platform that he had, to bring more attention to BLM. And I think that he even did a TED Talks about it. Like, he's done, you know, major tweets, major posts about it. But I think it's super cool that he used his, and he said it was risky. He said, you know, he'll do this. He may not get accepted, but he tried it. And it was a way for him to leverage the some of the messaging points that Black Lives Matter movement is about. So
that's amazing. That's fantastic. Yeah. Not African American kid, by the
exactly.
way. So it's.
And I think the connection for him is because he's Muslim American. He says there's a lot of Black Muslim American people within his own community that he's friends with and has right. strong connections and ties to. So for him, it's close to home because he has a relational quality to it, because they're within his own religious community, and he sees the parallels between that and what's happening. So
that's yeah. right. That's good. Well, that's fantastic. Before we get out of here, I want to talk to you about the streaming wars are heating up. I thought it was over. Like the demise of Spotify and Tidal have been greatly exaggerated, because I thought Apple Music has won the battle, Spotify, who is still, we talked about 2 weeks ago how Drake's album debuted and it was kill on Apple Music, and way more than it did on Spotify, even though Spotify's user base is larger. Well, Spotify is doing this thing now. It's been a big, huge deal with UMG, Universal Music Group. And if you're on premium, you can get some albums 2 weeks before free users and other users. So if you're a Spotify premium, you get albums 2 weeks ahead of time. 2 weeks is a long time. I mean, I, you know, that's kind of cool. Yes or no?
I don't know. I don't think it's cool. I mean, if you are big on exclusives or you big on getting the first of things, I'll stand in line for the first new iPhone or the first pair of Jordans.
The Jay-Z record comes out. That's my example. It's the title, but whatever.
Or whatever record comes out, I can wait 2 weeks. Like if the requirement is for me, if that is the incentive rather for me to pay for a subscription because I'll get the content 2 weeks before, it's not a big incentive.
Right.
I mean, but I get it. I mean, it's incentivizing the customer base that already has it to make them keep it, but it's not going to turn me over to get it. I'm not going to get a subscription because of that.
Huh?
Would you?
I'm I am an early adopter. I am a FOMO kind of person. So I could be tricked by something like this. I'm a fool. I might be tricked by this. I like the idea of getting something 2 weeks early for something I'm already doing. Will it make me go back to Spotify? I don't know. here's another question for you. Your boy Jay-Z decided he's going to test something out. He pulled all his albums off Spotify and Apple Music.
Hey, more power to
him. Just to see if folks are going to come listen to his stuff on Tidal. Now, he's obviously, his record's done, and it's been it's coming. It could drop any day. Could be in your phone right now. But I think this is just a move to sort of see what he's still testing out this exclusivity model on Tidal, which I don't like. I don't like the exclusivity model. But the question is, you know, is this the future? Is exclusivity the future, or is it like Spotify's trying? Is it early release, like Life of Pablo ended up being, or is it exclusivity, like Lemonade and some other stuff?
I think it's very similar to how we see it on, you know, our with our television, with the streaming platforms. Like, you're gonna get content on Netflix that you're not gonna get on Amazon, and so you have to decide.
PlayStation does it. Exactly. Xbox does it.
You have to decide what you want, who you want. So I think that if you're a fan of Jay-Z and that's the only source, I think that's smart for him. And if you really want that music, then you got to subscribe, or you got to figure out another way to get it. But I'll leave you to that.
I don't know, man. I don't know what to do about this. Like, I can't pay $30 a month for three different subscription services. I'm not getting rid of Apple Music. I love it. That's not getting rid of it. Spotify, already got rid of.
Yeah, Spotify's out of here.
Spotify's already out of here. Tidal, I keep going back and forth.
I've never had Tidal.
I get it. I've had it once every 4 months that it's been around.
So you'll get it for that exclusive release, and then you're
something out. Something will drop, I'll get it. Pablo drops, I'll get it. Lemonade drops, I'll get it. When Jay-Z drops, I'll get it. That's kind of it.
Yeah.
And I guess that's good enough. They're getting at least $30 to my money. They're getting a year's worth of my money, but they're getting some of my money. So I don't know.
I think it's smart for him to do that, and we'll see if it works for him. I'm sure it will, though. Hopefully, the album's killer.
Yeah, I think the album will be one for the ages. I think the album will be fantastic. But so that's it. Just no more Jay-Z for you. Well, you've already have all your stuff is already on files by other means.
I don't even have that anymore.
So how you? Well,
dang, I mean,
this is what you gonna do about Jay-Z?
I don't know, like, because usually
you go right now. It is all my stuff's off. No more Jay-Z.
Right, because I either put it on the playlist, it's offline, and when I get to it, I get to it. I can't remember the last time I actually searched for it, but there are records in some of my playlists. So if those records are now off now, like, that will be kind of messed up. Like, I guess, I mean, in a way, it's good business. He's forcing people's hands. Like, you really want this music? Well, this is the only place you can get it.
Yep.
And you get it for $10 or whatever the amount. What is the amount of title? I forgot. Is it 20?
No, it's the same. He's got a $10 one.
And it's 20 for, like, the higher quality, right?
The hi-fi, high-fidelity one's like 15 or something. Maybe it's 20, but it's up there. Which I'm still not buying that either.
Hey, but I think Spotify's starting to develop that as well, and to create that as another tier, put that, integrate that in their tier model. Hey, that you can pay a little extra more, you get better quality as a way to kind of, you know, shoot back, fire back at Tidal. Like, we have that too.
Is it that much better quality, you know?
Hey, man, if you stand in line for an iPhone or for some shoes, like, it's the same logic.
Yeah, I will too.
It's the same logic.
I'm a sucker. Well documented sucker. Okay, that's all we got. I think that's it for us. Anything else?
Nah, man, that's all I got, man.
Okay. All right, well, that's all I got, too. I guess we'll see you next time on BHL. Where can the people find you?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. Where can they find you?
Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time. Bye. Oh, well, I'll talk about it later. Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.